Welcome to a podcast of the Mike Novak Show. Don't forget that you can listen to Mike live on Sundays from 8 to 10 a.m. on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
I thought we had another one. All right, that's all we've got. We're done now. When you wake up Sunday morning, unless you live in Arizona or Hawaii, you will very likely have slept late without sleeping in. And that's because on Sunday at 2 a.m., daylight saving time begins, and we spring forward. Remember that spring forward, fall back, where we're springing forward. If it seems like the time change is coming a little early this year, it is, relatively speaking. In 2007, the Energy Policy Act went into effect, which makes daylight savings start about 3 weeks earlier than it used to. Why do we change the clocks at all, let alone change them earlier now? Well, it's for the farmers, so they can get their food to market when it's super fresh. Also, extra daylight keeps criminals off the streets. And daylight saving saves energy for obvious reasons, right? Because you don't need to turn on the lights as early. Those are some of the ways that daylight saving time has been explained, and it turns out that none of them are true.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in demand.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. And by SIDS Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers. And by Espoma, the leader in natural gardening solutions since 1929. And by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes since 1997. Podcasts of this program, along with green tips, valuable links, and DeMaio weather, are a click away at MikeNovak.net. That's MikeNovak.net. Here he is. He's not the harbinger of spring. He's actually the doormat for the season. Mike Novak.
Alert. Alert. Twitter is down.
Yeah.
Twitter is down. Oh, that's a shame. We can't get onto Twitter?
Not presently. We'll keep
You're
trying.
You're on Facebook, though, right?
Well, I've got that on one tab.
Okay.
And then I've got Twitter.
We'll keep trying to log into Twitter. How dare they?
Something is technically wrong. Thanks for noticing. We're going to fix it up and have things back to normal soon.
Wow. If anybody's listening and is a Twitter fan and thinks we don't know what we're doing here, 773-838-9278. Give us a call. 773-838-WCPT. But it's telling us we can't get onto Twitter. So all those people who are going to be tweeting the show are at a loss.
Mm-hmm.
What can they do? I know, it's just so sad because I've been working it so hard. I've been working so hard to keep up with, and I tweeted last night. It was 11 o'clock last night, but it was really 12.
Right.
I kept looking at the clock and it was 11 p.m. and I thought, no, it's not 11, it's really 12. It's really 12. I have to go to bed. And I was getting the last few messages out about the show, tweeting.
So you stayed up late to tweet?
Yeah.
And now this is completely not working.
Exactly.
Of course.
It has come back to bite me.
Murphy's Law.
That's the way it works. Good morning, folks. It is daylight saving time, and some of you, I'm going to tell you right now, you're late for church right now. So it is not, 7:08, right? It is 8:08. For those of you who didn't set the alarm and you're listening to my voice, I wonder how many people are now jumping out of bed panicked.
Yeah.
Ah! Ah!
on, give me clothes on. Oh,
no, they're more like knocking into each other because someone had the sense to turn the radio on. So they're more like stumbling around, bumping into each other, waiting for the coffee to brew.
Yeah, I did. I pulled one of those a few weeks ago where I was supposed to be someplace at 7:30 and I awoke with a start at 7. Oh, isn't that a horrible feeling? It's just an awful, awful, awful feeling. And I was just...
That was sort of me this morning.
I was screaming obscenities as I'm dressing. That was all. It was just, you know, as if it helps. And then sitting in the car, pounding on the steering wheel, saying, "You can't, the traffic cannot be bad. Uh-huh. This is not today."
That was, I was the only car on the road on the way here, and I do believe I hit every red light. Because I woke up late, and I didn't get out the door until almost, you know, 7:20
this morning. Yes, I know. And you didn't bring the munchkins.
No, I didn't bring munchkins.
No donuts.
No.
No munchkins.
I'm sorry. Just brought my smiling face.
Like I said, you didn't bring the munchkins.
I didn't bring the munchkins.
Maybe the boys will bring the munchkins at 10 o'clock.
Yep. Coincidentally, in cleaning up the studios and stuff around here, we did uncover autographs from some of the original munchkins from Wizard of Oz with Judy Garland and photographs of them. And I have
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious. I could go pull them from my desk right now.
You got to understand, Heather Fry, who is my producer, is also the office manager here, which gives me and my show more power in this building than anybody else's.
It helps.
It is true. It's just, you have to, one of the things, when I used to work at Gargantua Radio down the dial, one of the things I always did when I came into the building, and Bill, who, he doesn't have a mic, pull that mic over, Bill, come on. Bill Young, who has been driving authors all over the city for 23 years now.
23 years, yeah.
Yeah. Has brought my author here, who's being very patient, by the way, Anna. And it's Pavard? Is that how you pronounce it? And I met Bill when I worked at Gargantua Radio down the dial. And he would bring authors in for various programs like Milt Rosenberg and, gosh, Roy Leonard.
Oh, Roy Leonard, Wally Phillips. Who else was on that? Ian Punnett.
Oh, my goodness.
But Milt. Milt.
Milt mostly, yeah. And you Milt. Still bring. And I was engineering then, and Bill and I would sit in the control room. And we'd kibitz for a couple hours while the authors were on the air. And we got to know each other, and he walks in the door this
right,
morning.
Look there, where we both ended up.
Nowhere.
No, you're between Zaca Tacos and Paca Tacos.
On South Pulaski, so it's great to see you, Bill.
It's great to
I just
see
wanted
you.
To say hi and
thank you.
Give you due because what you got to know is when authors come to town, they have people sometimes to drive them around, and that's a great service. And you get to talk. You probably learn as much about the world as anybody.
It's definitely a seat of privilege to be stuck in traffic on the Kennedy with some of the great
with Henry Kissinger
the,
or yeah, something, you know,
minds of the universe.
Yeah, and you have been. So I know. Did you drive Margaret Thatcher in?
No, I met Margaret Thatcher at Milt actually in the green room waiting for whoever was on after Eddie Schwartz.
Amazing. Just amazing. Some old, we'll have to talk old radio at some point. Well, welcome, Bill. Now, turn the microphone over. And I was just going to say that when I was working down there, one of the things I would do is I would make friends with the security people and the custodians, because those are the people in power. Pull that over. Yeah.
Yeah, I always said my secret to success is having friends in low places.
Very true.
And here I am. I'm as about in the low place as you can get, and I'm proud to be your friend.
Well, you're above me.
And Anna, welcome to the program, Anna Pavard.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
Well, I'm so glad you're here. And when I saw this is, and everybody's told you the same story, I'm sure. I've read the same story about this book. Because I have a couple of the reviews that I linked to on my website. The book is called Simply Bulb, B-U-L-B, and you don't need to say anything else. I mean, I liken it to Madonna or Sting. You don't need a first name or a last. You don't even need a "the" in there. You just need bulb.
It's a bit bold, I know, but there we are.
But the important thing is you open the book or you open the package when it was sent to me, and one gasps. I looked at it and went, this is a great book. And remember, Heather, when I got it, I was showing it around to the people. Mighty House Show is on after ours. I say, look at this book. Look at this book. Look how wonderful this book is. This is they sent it to me. I got this book for free.
I put it in your mailbox.
Yeah, being the office manager.
Well, I always had this idea that this book should be like a jewel box. Wherever the page is open, there are these things shouting out, you're saying, look, you've just got to have me. You can't do without me. And this photographer, Andrew Lawson, he's an absolute genius. He's the best photographer working in the UK. And they just called some of his pictures in to do a dummy. And then Andrew said, oh, it sounds a nice book. How about if I shoot the whole thing? And astonishingly, the publishers said yes. It must have blown their budget sky high. But it gave me the book that I'd always dreamed of. Wherever you open these pages, there's these incredible things shining out at you.
You're absolutely right. And you don't even... No,
you don't even need the words. I said it first. It's absolutely true. Look, I was a filmmaker before I ever started writing.
Really?
And there's times, you know, when I'm still saying, look, just give me the camera. Don't let me have to hack through the 600 words setting the scene. Just give me the shot.
I like the way you think.
It's true.
And now, all right, he did... The principal photography, there are two credits. Tori Chugg?
That was his assistant. So you can say that it all came out of the same sort of class, as it were. Tori has worked with Andrew as his assistant and, you know, is extremely good as well.
And the visuals are stunning.
Yeah.
I'm telling you now, folks, if you have a gardener friend... And this came out last fall, so you've already made the rounds, I take it, in the States.
Oh, well, not the rounds. No, I went up to New York, and, you know, I did a lot of phone-in interviews and, you know, spoke to bloggers. But this is the first tour when I'm actually, you know, out on the road, as it were. And I love Chicago, and I'm so delighted to be here. It's my top town. City.
Oh, you can call it a town. It's our kind of town.
It's a great place, and it's the first place that I ever came to in the States.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's fabulous.
And a friend had the great good sense to stick me on one of those lecture tours on the boat on the river, and it's about the early skyscrapers, and I fell in love at that point. And I've been back to Chicago more than any other place.
Oh, that's wonderful. And I know you were here yesterday at the Flower and Garden Show.
And you were speaking there, too.
Yes, I spoke there last Monday. I'm sure our talks were decidedly different, but let me ask you, what did you think of the show?
I thought it was good. I mean, I'd like to have seen, obviously, you know, more green stuff and, you know, not so much selling. But, you know, all gardening people are like that. You know, this time of the year, we're so hungry for the real blooms, for the smell, for that extraordinary sense of, as it were, having stepped forward into spring. And that show, being undercover, I was longing for it to go on a little bit more. I didn't want it to run out into all the shops at the bottom.
Well, that's part of how they make their money, I guess.
I know.
You have to be able to support that show.
I know.
But you're right. I think it has increased by leaps and bounds over the last couple of years.
Yeah. What I said was really only saying, yes, it was so good, I wanted more of it. You know, and I do understand that, you know, there is this commercial necessity to make rents and pay for the whole thing. It's a very expensive thing to put up, I'm sure.
Oh, it is. And that's why you and I don't make any money speaking there.
No, but anyway, it's always nice to have people that you can talk to about things that you love. And, you know, bulbs have been a passion of mine ever since I've been gardening. And I don't know how it is, but it must be the same for you. There's always one thing that sort of starts coming up out of the crowd and waving at you and saying, hey, how about me? And, you know, these wavings go on for a long time, and then suddenly you realize you're absolutely hooked on this family. And bulbs are my thing, as it were.
What I will say about bulbs, and I say this to when I do garden talks, I think that a lot of people think bulbs are magic. It's almost like a magic show. And especially your neighbors who are not gardeners, and they see the bulbs come up in your yard, they say, "How, oh, that's so beautiful. How did you do that?" And you're thinking, let's see, I dug a hole. I put the bulbs down with the pointy side up, and I covered it back up, and then I walked away and waited till winter to be over, and here we are. And there's some truth in that, isn't there?
There is. It's the perfect package. It's like an egg. I mean, it's the most extraordinary device of nature, and you wonder why all plants aren't bulbs. Just such a clever thing to do. You leap up, you do your thing, you don't bore people by hanging around, you know, when actually your show's over. You just pack yourself away, and then you come up the next season, if you're lucky, if those squirrels, those mice, those horrible things don't actually eat you in the meantime.
That's true. That's absolutely...
What are your equivalents of squirrels and mice?
Squirrels and mice.
Ah.
Yes, squirrels and mice, yes. Although... You know, the whole range,
tree rats.
Chipmunks, moles, voles,
raccoons,
possums, rabbits, deer, you know, the whole, it runs the gamut.
We can match you on rabbits and deer at least.
I'll bet you can, yes. Deer actually are a serious problem in and around Chicago and a lot of places in the United States.
We have different ways of dealing with it.
We tend to not deal with it, which is part of our problem. We don't want to kill Bambi. And then their populations increase, and then we have terrible episodes where they invade gardens, and it becomes very difficult. And so you go, as I said, to a garden talk, and the question is, how do I keep the deer out of my garden? How do I keep the rabbits? Now, rabbits are another problem altogether, because you got, even in the big city, you're going to have rabbits, especially along the lakefront.
They've increased the past few years because the bird flu wiped out the majority of the crows, so they had no natural predators. Mm-hmm. So they were reproducing like rabbits.
Actually, not bird flu, but West Nile virus.
Oh, it was West Nile.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and that's a problem. These populations ebb and flow. And what do? They attack your bulbs. And you said something just now that I thought was one of the best bits of information in your book, which is, and I think a lot of gardeners don't understand this, your bulbs are not going to bloom every year. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's a source of big disappointment, but it all sort of came into focus for me when I was out in Kazakhstan riding with Kazakh horsemen through the Tian Shan Mountains. It was the sort of realization of a last piece of unfinished business with the tulip. And there I was on this extraordinary mountain range, the Tian Shan, looking out over wave after wave after wave of tulip egregiae. And I thought, this is extraordinary. Got down off the horse, actually looked at a patch of ground, perhaps, you know, a yard square, and realized that only 1 in 10 of what looked like an endless sheet of tulips rolling over the horizon, only 1 in 10 of those plants is actually flowering. It's a fantastic effort for a bulb to flower. It expends resources, but it has to do it, because in the seed pod that's made from the flower lies that possibility of genetic variation, which might be useful in the future. That's why all bulbs, as well as making the daughter bulbs alongside, the cloning effectively, sitting alongside the mother bulb, these little daughter bulbs, they also, every now and again, have to set seed in case some little variation will prove to be of advantage to them. But then, out there in the wild, they rest and they build up resources until they can flower again. In the garden, we're so greedy. We want every single thing to perform every single year. They will, given time, settle into a colony such as you get on the mountains, which I had running underneath a pergola in our rectory garden at home, where an old cottage tulip called Magier settled, bulked up, increased, and gave the effect that actually there were two solid ribbons of flowers down there underneath the pergola. But if, again, you got down on your hands and knees and counted, probably only about 1 in 8 of those things was flowering. But they had evolved into a colony where there were so many bulbs underground that enough came up to flower each year to give you the effect you wanted. You have to give them time.
And so, and another point that comes out of that talk is the idea that you need to plant enough. If you have 5 bulbs and only 1 blooms, you've got 1 bloom, you know? And as you've pointed out, I have said this for years, if I always say, whenever you go in to buy bulbs, multiply that by 5 at least.
Absolutely. But, I mean, what else would you want to spend your money on? I mean, fantastic, yeah. incredible bargain that bulbs are. I mean, who would want less than 25 of a crocus anyway? Who would want less than 50 of a tulip? Who would want less than 100 of lilies? It's, nothing better.
That is Anna Pavard, who has written a fantastic book called Bulb. It's easy to remember the title. That's something. And I tell you, run out. If you've got gardening friends, run, don't walk, to the local bookstore and get a copy for your friend. I would say buy it for the holiday and hang on to it for 8 months and then give it to them.
Easter's coming. Wonderful time to give a book on bulbs.
That'd be a great book. Great time to give
a
book on bulbs.
In May.
And the other thing I want to refer to is when she talked about riding the horses in Kazakhstan. Well, the last time I was in Kazakhstan. Wait, I've never been in Kazakhstan.
I was going to say, I'm not the only one who doesn't go to Kazakhstan on a regular basis.
Yeah, it doesn't really.
Look, it's worse.
Damn, the flowers must be great.
And the apple blossom.
I hate to even ask where else you've been looking at. But and when we come back, because I've got to take a short break here, when we come back, talk very briefly about something that you were mentioning, which is species tulips, which... I planted a bunch of them in the fall, and a lot of people don't understand that the tulip you see now has come a long way. Anna Pavard, the author of Bulb, we will be right back with her in just a second. Now, if you want to get a jump on saving your plants from insect problems early this spring, and it's just about the perfect time to start using Bonide's all-season spray oil. This oil can be used to control overwintering eggs of mites, scale, aphids, bud moths, leaf rollers, galls, mealybugs. Bet you didn't realize there were so many insects like that. It can be used now when your trees and shrubs are dormant, but you can also apply it when green tips appear or during the growing season. Bonide's all-season spray oil is part of their Garden Naturals line. It smothers most insect eggs that were left behind last year and are ready to be unleashed on your plants. It's easy to use, and it's not a poison. Instead, the thin film of oil covers the target insect or mite and plugs the spiracles or pores through which it breathes. Sounds pretty unpleasant, doesn't it? The cause of death is primarily suffocation, but if it's going to happen, it might as well happen to those critters. That might be unpleasant for them. It's going to make you and your plants happy. All Seasons oil is highly recommended for use on fruit trees, shade trees, shrubs, ornamentals, roses, and vegetables. It comes with a convenient applicator that will fit your needs. Quart ready to use, quart ready to spray with built-in hose and attachment for easy spraying. And a concentrate for those of you who prefer to mix your own. This is year you're going green, right? Try All Season Oil from Bonide. You can find it at Gethsemane Garden Center in Chicago, Heinz Brothers Greenhouse in St. Charles, and the Chalet in Wilmette. Or go to Bonide.com to find a retailer near you or to see a complete listing of all of the Bonide products.
DR Services Unlimited has been providing Chicago's North Shore with award-winning remodeling and design-build services since 1991, giving their clients top quality service and real value. They're on the cutting edge of green building technology, helping clients make their home more energy efficient without sacrificing beauty or function. If you want to make your home more energy efficient, simply want to add a room or renovate, call DR Services at 847-998-1687. Or visit them at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
I am happy to introduce another new sponsor to the Mike Novak Show, the Jonathan Green Company. Now, there was a real Jonathan Green, and around the time that Abraham Lincoln was president, he was already working on how to grow a better lawn. I mean Jonathan Green, not Abraham Lincoln. Now, that knowledge has been passed down through the generations to the family members who run the company today. And they're working to create the new American lawn, one that uses less fertilizer, is drought-tolerant, and more disease and insect-resistant. For instance, their Black Beauty grass seed mixture is a breakthrough in turf grass breeding. It uses tall fescues that are the darkest green turf grasses on the market today. The Natural Beauty All-Organic Lawn Fertilizer contains 25% humates, the best food source for the beneficial microbes in the soil, and will feed your lawn to up to 10 weeks per application. Also, it has no phosphorus, which can cause water quality problems. Then there's Jonathan Green Organic Weed Control, which is 100% corn gluten meal in a beautiful sugar grind, which spreads nicely and breaks down fast. It won't blow away like lighter weight powdery corn glutens and provides pre-emergent control for both grassy weeds and crabgrass, broadleaf weeds like dandelions and 20 other invasive lawn weeds. And you got to understand, you don't put it on the weed that's already growing. It keeps seeds from germinating. That's how it stops weeds. To find out more about the Jonathan Green story, log on to jonathangreen.com and register to receive the Jonathan Green newsletter. You can find Jonathan Green products at SIDS, Home and Garden Showplace in Bolingbrook, Pasquazi Home and Garden Center in Barrington, and Wanamaker's Home and Garden Center in Downers Grove. This is as close as I'm going to get to playing St. Patrick's Day music.
Oh, darn it. I should have brought some.
This is
silly
Van,
me.
It's Van Morrison, okay?
That's Irish music.
I know. This is as close as you're going to get. I'll tell you what. I will play Irish music today if it's hip. All right?
U2's hip. They're Irish.
We might do some U2.
Cranberries are hip. They're Irish.
All right. I got some cranberries. Mm-hmm. We can do that. So.
I'm Irish. I have flaming red hair, so this is my season. And I'm now mad that I didn't bring in any of my good Irish folk music.
And I am happy.
Some of it's good. It's not all pipers and men in skirts.
If I don't even celebrate Valentine's Day, I'm certainly not going to celebrate St. Patrick's Day. So.
Well, he drove all the snakes out of Ireland. He was an all right bloke.
Yeah, like that really happened. Okay.
Yeah, it's a nice story.
That's a great story.
It's an excuse to drink beer, which I'm for.
Anna Pavard, who's authored the book Bulb, is in the studio. I'm going to ask a favor of you. When we first booked you on the program, you had to run off to someplace else, and apparently you don't now.
No.
Can you stick around till about 9 o'clock?
I would love to.
All
Thank
right,
you
great.
Very much.
Why don't you pull that
but
mic
look,
just a little bit closer there?
What I don't understand is why are you guys so hot on St. Patrick's Day and do nothing about St. David? I'm Welsh. I'm really put out that you don't have this huge celebration for my great hero.
St. David?
Yeah.
All right, let's
March
do it.
March the 1st.
March the 1st?
Yeah.
Well, then...
we march around with leeks and daffodils at home.
See, that's way better.
It's important.
Leeks and daffodils.
Yep.
Do you have any St. David Day music for me?
No. It's mostly, good old 19th century miners' choirs that's played on St. David's Day at home. But as a child, I was brought up, to hate the English, and we marched around and did all sorts of extraordinary, sort of hate the English dances, and it was fantastic.
It's funny, everybody hates the English.
Yeah, they do.
The French hate the English.
The English hate the French as much, so that's all right.
True. Some Americans hate the English.
Yeah, World Peace Day.
Yeah, exactly. The Irish hate the English. Okay.
That was supposed to be forgotten all that.
And then I'm thinking, it just leads me into the punchline from Tom Lehrer from National Brotherhood Week, but I'm not going to get into that. So,
anyway, how about a movement here in Chicago for St. David's Day parades? Okay,
I'm okay with that. I'm all for that.
St. David's Day parade. That I can get behind. Yeah. And then we dye the river purple.
And we have a
purple.
Lovely flag.
Ooh, I'd be okay with the purple river.
We have a beautiful flag, which is green and white. Green at the top, white underneath, and a huge red dragon flaming across the center.
Arr.
It's the best of all flags.
Yeah,
okay,
that's good.
A red dragon. Mm. So then we'll dye the river red. That's what we'll do. Anna, we were briefly, and we'll do this, I have just a couple of minutes, and I've got to get to Rick DeMille weather here. I wanted to talk very briefly about tulips, and I know you can't talk briefly about tulips because you wrote a best-selling book about tulips. I mean, that's and I figured, looking at your new book, Bulb, I was trying to figure out, where does one get the money to put a gorgeous book like this together? And then I realized, well, you have a bestseller ahead of it. And then the companies go, it worked out pretty well for us last time. Let's do it again, right?
It gives you great freedom. As a writer, it's the greatest thing and the most surprising thing that ever happened to me was that Tulip was a bestseller. Because I wrote it not for publication. I wrote it entirely for myself. Because I adored this flower. I wanted to find out all about it. There wasn't a book that actually answered my questions. And when I'd written this thing and pasted 120 of my favorite pics in it, I stuck it in the attic. And I thought, well, that was good. I really enjoyed that 6 years. And then it came out. And it's typical of the Tulip. It's going to be anywhere. It's going to be there at the top. It isn't an also-ran. It's an incredible plant. And I'm really interested that you actually have been planting species.
Love species tulips. And I try to explain to people what a species tulip is. And it's hard. It's difficult. Maybe, perhaps you can do a better job than I.
Well, I'm sure I can't. But, I mean, there are 120 what you might call basic building blocks, which are the wild tulip species that are centered there in that place I was talking about, Kazakhstan. Central Asia is the cradle.
Oh, I love Kazakhstan. Have I talked to you about my experiences there?
No, I'm not name-dropping, but it really was a fantastic place to be. For a tulip nut, can you imagine being at the fount, at the source of everything that you love most.
Important thing is that's where tulips are from.
That's right. They are from this place, Central Asia, and these amazing species that developed niche plants, you know, every one slightly different to fit into a different niche. They then began to drift along the Silk Road. They came into Europe. People went overboard about them, and gradually they started crossing these 120 building blocks to provide those big, tall, huge-shouldered Darwins and cottage-flowered tulips, and the ones that you call French tulips over here that actually were bred baguettes, they were originally called, to hold a quart of wine in their cups. That was written in the 17th century. And we don't get French tulips in England, but the first time I saw them was here in the States.
Really?
On a bar, and I walked in and I thought, that's my baguette. That's what they were talking about. But we actually, at the Royal Horticultural Society, I sit on a daffodil and tulip committee, and we actually did a trial of species tulips, planted 99 different sorts, just to test how they settled, and most importantly for gardeners, whether they increased year after year. It was a 3-year trial, and the great answer for gardeners is they do. They increase. They settle. They actually have got much more elastic.
But people, I fear, are going to be disappointed if they plant species tulips because they're smaller. They're the little bulbs. And you can see where the great tulip comes from down the road. The species tulip is short and small. It's delicate. But they're beautiful. They're gorgeous.
They are fantastic. And people don't despise a crocus because it's small. I mean, you know, you just need to think a little bit more carefully about where you're putting it, along the front of a border, in a pot. I mean, they're fantastic, grown in pots.
And the best part is they return faithfully.
They return faithfully. And also in a pot, you can adjust the drainage, because there's two things that a tulip is aching for, and you know all that. You know, one is good drainage, and the second one is a baking in summer, which you here in Chicago are much better able to give them than we are in the UK.
True.
Where our summers are, you know, dampish and never terribly hot.
But you have to understand that when you put them in a mixed border, they can get overwatered in the summer, and that's death to a tulip, is if you water even constantly, it's probably going to take a little bit of a hit, isn't it?
It is. These irrigation systems are death to all sorts of bulbs, particularly those Central Asian ones, which are used to leaping up after the snow melt, doing their thing, and then packing themselves away before those temperatures hit those flanks of the mountains. I mean, temperatures hot enough to burst a thermometer. So they are used to that incredible variation in temperature. And it's the summer baking, as you know, that actually initiates the flower bulb for the flower point in the bulb for the following season.
That's Anna Pavard. She's the author of Bulb. She's sticking around till 9. If you got a question about bulbs, and, you know, you might not now, 773, because this is when they're coming up. I'm looking in my yard. My species tulips are coming up. My daffodils are coming up. My fritillaria are coming up. I love you what you had to say about fritillaria in the book. And people say, well, it's a fritillaria. Well, I'll tell you what a fritillaria is, but we'll do that after we do our weather. 773-838-9278. If you've got a question about bulbs, the woman is here. She's here in the studio. She can answer the question, and we'll get back to her after weather, and we'll get to weather right after I give you a tip from the Care of Trees. Believe it or not, spring will be here next week. So what should you be doing for your trees now? Well, spring's a good time to prune out any frost and freeze damage to your plants and trees, especially since this was a good old-fashioned tough Chicago winter. So when you have a few spare minutes, take a look at your trees. Are there hanging branches, split bark, or other obvious signs of damage? Are there dead branches that you've known about for years that you finally want removed? Also, check the mulch around the base of your tree. Does it look a little thin? Do you want to expand it this year? A good idea. Do not grow lawn up to the base of your tree. That's always a good idea. With 9 locations, the Care of Trees has been serving Chicagoland for 60 years. The Care of Trees shares your enthusiasm for the many ways trees enhance the quality of your life, and the Care of Trees combines that joy with a dedication to the utmost in client care, putting you and your trees first. Make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborists at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees. Let us immediately go to line one. Boy, I'm really late today, but I'll tell you, Rick DeMaio, Anna Pavard is fascinating, and I don't get an expert of this quality in studio this often, so I think you can forgive me for that.
Well, actually, you're early. My clock says 7:40, Mike, so let's go back.
Very good. I use that
once a year at work.
It does. It worked for me. Last week, you said some fascinating things. You went on about soil temperatures,
mm-hmm.
and it got me to thinking, because this was such a beautiful week and it was warm.
Oh, man.
And yet I got an email from my buddy Dan Costa at Vern Goer's greenhouses out in Hinsdale, mm-hmm. and he, once again, he says it's tempting to start some gardening too early in England right now, or Wales, actually. It's better conditions. I linked, Anna, your column from yesterday's Independent on my website, and you're talking about tasks that we're not going to do for several weeks yet. So it's a little warmer there, and here we're just getting out of the cold. In fact, last week, Rick, you were talking about how the ground was basically frozen still in a lot of places, or very close to it.
Yeah, it was. I think we mentioned, Mike, that the soil temperature about 4 inches below the topsoil, if you took some of the snow away, which there was still quite a bit of snow on the ground this time last week in parts of Lake County, parts of northern Cook County. Soil temperature was running only about 33 or 34 degrees. So you're right about that. But also what happened in the last 4 or 5 days is we basically lost all the snow cover. We had 2 or 3 days where the temperature not so much warmed up during the afternoon, but stayed fairly mild at night. And that's what's really important. And that's pretty much what the kind of climate that the UK has. And in fact, one of the lessons that I was teaching in one of my classes this past week was we look at different types of climate. And climate for Chicago is what we determined to be a continental polar air mass, where you can warm up quite a bit during the summertime. Anna was talking about how warm our summers are. But we also cool off quite a bit in the wintertime. So if you look at the average temperature for O'Hare, the annual average is about 48.3 degrees, but the range, which is the difference between the lowest average temperature and the warmest average temperature, our range is about 52 degrees, meaning that in January, monthly temperature is about 21. In July, it's about 73. So we have about a 51 to 52 degree range. If you look at places like London, even Wales, west side of Great Britain, their average temperature in July, when you add up the high and the low, is about 61. But in the wintertime, in January, it's about 45 or 46. So they never really get their soil temperature that cold, which is why their growing season is typically much longer. But to kind of cut to the chase here, Mike, the soil temperature at the Botanic Gardens, just measured yesterday, is now 41 degrees. Out in Streamwood, it's 42. And even though the air temperature got up into the 60s a couple of days this past week, I think we all know that the soil temperature needs to get probably about a good 10 to 15 degrees warmer for things to start to grow. So that really is the most important aspect, Mike.
Let me ask
animals as well, obviously.
Yeah, let me ask Anna, what soil temperature do you think is favorable for finally getting out into? It has a lot to do with moisture as well. You don't want to compact your soil, which is death to plants. I mean, you compact your soil now, which means you get out and you walk around in your garden when it's too wet. You're paying for that for months, maybe years.
That's true. There's an old saying in Britain that you shouldn't be out planting anything in your veg garden until you can sit on the soil in your bare bottom. So, you know, that's our sort of
do that every day.
I do it every day.
And do you do that often in Wales, Anna?
Well, you know, but what's it, it's fascinating. I love all this stuff about soil temperature. I love hearing experts like that talk. It's so riveting. But the thing is, actually, in the UK this year, we've had temperatures of, we're working in centigrade, unfortunately, now, which, you know, is not easy. But, you know, we're down to minus 22 in the UK this winter, which has been quite a fright for us. And we've been locked up since mid-November. It's been a very unusually long, hard winter with very little snow cover in our part of the country, but a lot of snow in other places. And whereas you here in Chicago are beautifully lined up for snow, you expect it. In the UK, nobody has snow plows because we don't get this happening very often.
Well, that's not exactly true, Rick, is it, for Chicago? Because in the last few years, we've had snow, but I can remember us going through long periods where there was hardly any snow cover at all.
Yeah, we went through a drought, Mike, probably between about 1985 and about, say, 1999. We had pretty much below normal snow cover. I think we were averaging, or even below normal snowfall. We were averaging about 25 to 28 inches a year when normal was right around 40. Then we had that one big dump back in 1999, which kind of, you know, kind of put the short-term average up, you know, fairly high. And then we had some extremely odd winters where we got a lot of snow in December, and then we all of a sudden we had mild weather in January. I'll never forget January 2006, where we had three consecutive days. Actually, it was January 2007. We had three consecutive days in the 60s. Any snow that we had was completely gone, and then we got extremely cold right after that. And I'll never forget that the soil froze down to a depth of almost 6 inches because we didn't have that snow cover. So we have had some odd winters in the past where snow cover has obviously been pretty much on the low side. But the last three winters, Mike, I have to say, have been perfect for Chicago. Even though you look at the numbers and you hear 52.5 inches for O'Hare for the wintertime, you think, holy cow, that's a lot of snow. We had basically two small-scale lake-enhanced, lake-effect events that basically dumped right on top of O'Hare. If you look at the average number of events that we've had, greater than 4 inches, if you kind of cover the metropolitan area, we're pretty much near normal as far as how snowfall occurred, the time, the maximum amount, the minimum amount. I do a lot of research, not only looking at what one place gets, but how it averages out over other places. And this winter is probably going to go down in the books as very average as far as snowfall across northern Illinois. But more importantly, just looking at the numbers over the last 3 months, considering that the spring equinox kicks off this Saturday at 12:30 p.m., if you look back at the month, or at least the winter season from December, January through February, we're basically right at 1 degree below normal, precipitation right at normal. And as long as we continue, like we said last week, Mike, this very, very slow melting of the snow, this very slow melting of the frost level down to about maybe a couple of inches or so, this is excellent news going into the springtime because it allows that infiltration and percolation of water down to about 3, 4, or 5 inches for some of the roots of some of the trees and the bushes to really get in on the action of some of the rainfall that we've been having. So I really look back at this winter and also not so much the winter, but the preceding November and October and September, where that's really what kind of helps out with the groundwater as well. And I'm very optimistic going into the spring season. And the pattern over the next couple of weeks is optimistic as well, Mike.
Good. Well, All right, let's get into that forecast then quickly, because I heard that there might be some cold weather next week, but I take it it's not going to be brutally cold.
No, it's hard to get that cold this time of the year. Bottom line, yesterday was one of those days you want to put down on the calendar as rotten. You know, it was just downright awful. Today, not as rotten. How about that? You can see the sun is beginning to rise off to the east. A lot of low clouds still coming in off Lake Michigan. The dense fog that we had was about as low as I've ever seen it. And again, the lake water temperature is only 34 degrees. And from my apartment, believe it or not, there's still actually some ice along the shoreline. This is not ice that's in the lake. This is ice that's basically packed up along the shoreline. But Anna, I don't know if you were here about a month ago, but the lake was about 50% filled with ice on the south end. And it's something that you kind of look, you go, how does a lake that large get that much ice? And then within 4 months, people are swimming in it. The fact of the matter is we get, you know, quite a change in seasons here. So so not too bad today. A lot of cloud cover. Temperatures primarily low 40s. We'll continue the process of clearing out and drying out, Mike, by tomorrow. So I'll see temperatures. I think we see temperatures close to about 48 degrees downtown, maybe lower 50s inland.
And by the way, we still use Fahrenheit here.
How about this? How about 10? 10 centigrade tomorrow. I know my centigrade Fahrenheit scale pretty well.
Well, good.
But if I say 10 on the radio, people go, "What's up with that, tomorrow?" So I won't. So upper 40s tomorrow, low 40s today. We won't go too much in reverse there. Probably still low 50s during the day on Tuesday, but then we get a little bit of a cool shot come in here. Tuesday afternoon, a couple of sprinkles, kind of cooler on Wednesday, low 40s, and then back to lower 50s for Thursday and Friday. And the cold air you're talking about, I think, Mike, comes in sometime next Monday or Tuesday. This will probably be the last true shot of what we call a mixture of polar and Arctic air, but I have to say, it definitely looks like the period between about the 22nd and about the 26th. I wouldn't be surprised if we get one last shot of snow in here, because we average about 6 inches of snow a March. In, you know, each March season, we average about 6.5 inches of snow. And I would not be surprised if we get a good 3 to 6 inches out of this next event that comes.
Whoa.
Out.
Okay. Well,
yeah,
that.
It'll be a heavy, wet snow, and as we all know, this time of the year, it lasts about a week and a half, and then it's gone.
Oh, it lasts probably like 3 days, probably. All
yeah,
right.
Yeah, it depends on how much sun you get. But,
yeah.
Yeah, the long-range models, obviously, were out of winter from that standpoint, and I don't know about you, but all of a sudden, I looked around, I'm like, wow, all the snow is gone, and it happened in about a week period of time.
It really did.
Yeah.
And in the same period, all the bulbs started coming up, and so you can see green everywhere.
Yeah, you saw that. Yeah, everything had a little bit of a hint of green there. So
you got
just in time for St. Patty's Day, Mike.
All right. Thank you. Rick DeMaio Weather. You can go to DeMaioWeather.com. You can go to my website, MikeNovak.net, and click on to Rick's smiling face, and he's got all kinds of great tips and links on his website. Rick, always a pleasure, and we'll talk next week.
Okay, sounds good. Have a good day, Mike.
You too. Bye-bye. It's here. It's just off the presses, the March-April edition of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. Why do you need it? Well, if you're a gardener in Zone 5, and by the way, what zone are you in?
We don't do zones. We do soils. You're on chalk.
Oh,
you're on peat.
Okay.
You're on, yeah.
I believe you're about Zone 8, though, if I were to keep track of that. My question to you is, how can you live without it? For one thing, when you get this issue, you will also receive the annual Chicagoland Gardening Resource Guide, which has information about garden centers, suppliers, arboreta, greenhouses and florists, and landscape design and installation services throughout the region. That alone is worth the price of admission. And in this issue, there are stories about how to deal with some of the worst garden pests organically, why you're not a rube if you grow rhubarb, and how to build a cold frame to extend your gardening season or get it off to an early start. By the way, for those of you who rototill your yards religiously twice a year, our own Beth Botts explains why you might be fighting nature by doing that. You can find Chicagoland Gardening Magazine in newsstands all over the area, but here's what I suggest. Get a subscription and have it delivered to your home. And if you check out that Mike Guys column this month, it's in the very back of the magazine, you might learn something about tomatoes and baseball. That's all I'm going to say. Go to ChicagolandGardening.com or call 888-265-3600, 888-265-3600.
Homeowners, why replace your expensive shrubbery every time deer or rabbits visit your property? You can save your plantings for a fraction of the cost with Bob-X. Spring is finally here, and nature's hungry creatures will start feasting on your gardens and landscapes. Stop them the all-natural way with Bob-X repellent sprays. Bob-X guarantees protection for your spring plantings from deer and small animal damage. Use the most effective animal repellents on the market. Bob-X repellents give people the confidence to invest in and enjoy their landscapes. Bob-X's unique deterrent ingredients are all-natural and are environmentally friendly. Bob-X won't wash off in the rain or with regular watering. Get Bob-X at your local independent garden center or hardware store. If they don't have it, ask them to get Bob-X. To learn more about Bob-X, go to bobx.com. That's B-O-B-B-E-X.com. Plants thrive and survive with Bob-X. Bobex.
Is it possible that spring is a week away? Get ready to garden, except not too soon. Be careful. Don't go walking out there and compacting your soil. But Sid's Greenhouse is ready to help you get started. If you haven't gotten your seeds started, see, that's a good place to start because you're indoors and you're walking on concrete in your basement. If you haven't gotten your seeds started yet, what are you waiting for? Sid still has a good selection of the best varieties, including USDA organics. If you don't have a yard to plant in, or even if you do, consider an earth box, the world's most revolutionary garden system. Use it to grow all sorts of vegetables or flowers with less fertilizer, less water, and certainly less effort. Now, if you're more of a tree person, this is a good time to check out the selection of fruit trees at SIDS. Shop early for the best selection. And while it's still too early to plant most summer blooming bulbs, as you know, it's the ground's still pretty cold, and you're nodding, Anna. It would be a little tough. But that doesn't mean you can't check them out, right? And if you get them and they're in some nice peat, you can hold on to them for a while before you put them in the ground.
Yeah, especially lilies.
Yes, lilies, they'll take a lot of abuse. I got to tell you, I left three bulbs that I dug up last fall, and then left them on the side of the house and forgot about them. And I came back a few days ago and looked at them, and they were sitting out unprotected and open. They're still viable. They're still firm. I couldn't believe it. They're just amazing, aren't they? SIDS is Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and they're located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard. For more information or to join their free email list for news, garden tips, and sale information, visit SIDSonline.com. We still haven't gotten our Welsh music in, so I have to go with the Irish until we can. Who's Welsh? What performer would I know?
Catherine Zeta-Jones is Welsh.
Wait, what?
Catherine Zeta-Jones is
she
Welsh.
And what about Tom Jones?
He's Welsh?
He's Welsh.
Fantastic.
Trousers and all.
It's not unusual.
Exactly.
That's right.
I want to see you swivel your hips like that, Mr. Novak.
No, you don't.
No, I don't. Yeah, no.
No, you don't.
And also, going further back, Shirley Bassey, Tiger Bay, Cardiff. You know Shirley Bassey? Black performer?
Shirley Bassey?
Yeah.
One
of those great sort of late 50s, early 60s singers.
Didn't
huge
she do,
voice.
Didn't she do the James Bond theme?
Goldfinger.
Yeah, that's right.
We got to track down Goldfinger.
Okay.
If she's Welsh, we're playing the Goldfinger.
I will find it.
We will play that today. All right. That is Anna Pavard. She has written a fabulous, fabulous book called Bulb. We've been talking about Bulb. Let's take a quick question, go to line two. And Eleanor from Clarendon Hills, you're on the Mike Novak Show.
Hi. Nice to talk to you. And if you're going to get Welsh, why don't you get some of the Welsh male choruses? They're fantastic.
The Welsh male choruses.
Yeah.
Now you're scaring me, Eleanor. Okay.
They're great. Anyway, I'm calling in because there's something that I have used for many years, and I don't even remember where I heard it, to plant bulbs and keep the wee beasties from getting at them. And that is I use cayenne pepper, which is, you know, biodegradable, all kinds of good things. Put it in the bottom of the hole, put the bulb on top, put some dirt on top of the bulb, put another sprinkle of the pepper, and then cover it over and sprinkle pepper on top. All mammals hate that.
Have you used that?
They do not like the taste of the pepper.
The cayenne pepper. Have you done that, Anna?
I've done that. I use a slightly different technique in that if I'm planting crocuses, it works brilliantly with crocuses as well. I just tip, a load of cayenne pepper into the crocus bag and just gently shake it around and then, stick the bulbs in straight from the bag like that. But it's the same principle. Yeah. You're absolutely right. It keeps them away.
Well, and
my beasties are persistent. So when in the next spring when my flowers are coming up, I go around, and as soon as the shoots start showing, I also sprinkle some pepper because ours will, they'll see the bulbs coming up, and they'll go after them.
That's fabulous. That's a great tip,
yeah.
Eleanor. I really appreciate that. I'll tell you what.
Birds.
What?
It doesn't hurt birds.
No, and I love the organic. I forgot to turn up. Oh, who's calling? Who wants to get in? That was me. At any rate, I'll tell you what I'm going to do, Eleanor, because you called in. I'm going to give you a $25 gift certificate to SIDS. How's that?
Oh, that's great.
All right, you hang on, and you talk to Heather about that,
well,
okay?
Well, another thing that happens, though, with beasties, a friend of mine just feeds them all winter, and then they stay away from her stuff. In fact, she feeds them, period. She gets chow in on pizza.
Well, that might create other problems. I want to get in a couple more comments from Anna, but thank you so much. I'll put you on hold, and Heather will talk to you. Anna?
Yes.
You know what? I don't even know how to wrap this up. It's just such a great book. Is there anything that you would like, some final words you'd like to say about bulbs? I mean, I know this is like the lamest close I've ever done for a segment.
It's not lame. You're giving me a great opportunity to go on a hard sell. I'm terrible at a hard sell. All I would say is these things just sell themselves. And if you just see what's available now, we've talked a lot about the, you know, things that you might have planted last fall that are flowering now. But there's another great bulb planting season ahead. And this spring bulb plant season, which gives you gorgeous things that happen in summer and in fall to come, it tends to get slightly forgotten this second season. So lilies, you know, is an absolutely number one choice for pots and for borders and absolutely stupendously dramatic plants for the garden. But I don't know whether you grow Euchomus here, pineapple lilies, these very strange plants with columns of flowers and pineapple tufts of leaves on top. I saw them on sale at the Dutch Bulb Company stand at the Chicago Flower Show yesterday, so I know you can get
them. So they're here someplace.
They're here someplace, exactly. But I think Euchomus are great because they come on late summer, late August, early September, just when you think your garden's actually packing up for the season a bit and looking a bit tired, and out come these things with great fleshy leaves, great in a pot, very dramatic.
Well, the name of the book is Bulb. It's very simple. Anna Pavard, P-A-V-O-R-D. The links are on my website, mikenovak.net. Go to this week's show. And it's published by Mitchell Beasley, which is an imprint of Octopus Publishing Group out of the UK. But you obviously, it's an American version because you have the hardiness zones for the United States, and you have the heat zones as well, so you'll know what to do. Anna, thank you so much for being here and coming in. It was delightful.
It was a great pleasure for me. Thanks for the invitation.
And Mr. Bill Young, thank you for driving her down here. All right, second half of the show, we're gonna be talking food, and we're talking lawns and how to keep your lawn safe from pesticides, and we're going to talk about Victory Gardens right after 9 o'clock. I hope you stick around on the Mike Novak Show.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. And by SIDS Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers. And by Espoma, the leader in natural gardening solutions since 1929. And by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes since 1997. Here he is, Mike Novak. To pay our share.
This isn't Welsh, it's Australian. Close enough. Yes?
I'm just more embarrassed that I didn't realize that Tom Jones was Welsh.
I think
he's probably a huge guy over there, and I feel bad I didn't know. I knew he was from the UK. I just didn't know whereabouts from.
I think I knew that. I had forgotten that he was Welsh. We will get to our next guest. The Yarden is in the house.
Woo-hoo!
There she is. Another. It's all Twitter all the time. See, we actually got on Twitter.
Yes.
That's good. Finally. I don't know what happened. Were you having difficulties this morning? We tried to get on. Couldn't get on first.
Operator trouble.
What's that?
Operator trouble.
Ooh, well, since Heather's doing that, you know.
You saw me sign in.
Their own
warning popped up. I just refreshed and refreshed and refreshed until I broke through.
You never know.
You never know
what's going on. All right. Now, there was a time when maintaining a lush green lawn meant choosing between harsh chemicals or natural alternatives that didn't work. Not anymore. Espoma, maker of Holytone, presents Espoma Organic Weed Preventer to help prevent tough weeds like crabgrass and dandelions from establishing in the spring naturally. Their secret really isn't such a secret. I talked about corn gluten meal on my show for years. Corn gluten meal is a byproduct from the production of cornstarch for food, but for some reason it helps to keep seeds from germinating properly, including weed seeds. Simply spread Espoma Organic Weed Preventer as recommended when you see the forsythia start to pop, and then again at the end of the summer. It will keep weeds like crabgrass, foxtail, and purslane from getting started on or in your lawn. You know, but I like purslane. I really don't have any problems. I think, it, you know, you can eat it for one thing. So, you know, don't get all bent out of shape about purslane. And while it won't kill perennials like dandelions, it will keep their seeds from germinating, which means that the longer you use Espoma Organic Weed Preventer, the fewer weeds you will see. And here's a bonus. Espoma Organic Weed Preventer includes 100% natural organic nitrogen, but it doesn't overload your lawn with nitrogen, which can wash into the water table. And because it's organic, it's safe for your kids and pets immediately. For more information, visit www.espoma.com. And while you're there, join the Espoma Garden Club. Espoma, E-S-P-O-M-A, the leader in natural gardening solutions since 1929. Heather, dear, can we find Shirley Bass there?
Yes, sir.
Shirley Bassey, rather. You got it there? That's all you got to hear is that.
Goldfinger.
So she's Welsh, huh? I didn't know that. I hope Anna's listening on the way home.
I do hope so as well.
Anna, if you're listening, this is for you.
Goldfinger. They should name a tulip, like a Goldfinger tulip for Anna.
Yeah,
like
maybe there should be.
Maybe they will in her home garden.
Who knows?
Who knows?
Let's welcome in our guest, Lamanda Joy, also known as The Yarden on Twitter. How are you? Pull that microphone up a little bit and say hi.
I'm great. Thank you. I'm highly caffeinated. It was an early morning.
Oh, yeah, it is. It's earlier than it should have been.
Yeah, with that time change.
Yikes. For those of you who just woke up, it's 9 o'clock, okay? It's 9:08. You missed church already, okay? So don't panic. Just, you know, roll over and just listen to the show for a while. And you're doing some really cool stuff. You've been following the whole Victory Garden thing in Chicago, both in the past and in the future, in the present. You know, where are we going with it now? And you write about it on your blog. Your blog is also called The Yarden, and I've got a link to that on my website. You go to this week's show, and you wrote a thing called The Lost Victory Garden Seed List of 1943. That sounds awesome, actually. It sounds mysterious. How many seeds did we lose from 1943 to the present?
Well, I was pretty happy to find out that about 75% are still available. So that was good. I found historical information about the remaining seeds. But, you know, it was a pretty good crop still, if you will. Some of the things that I think are not very popular, like turnips, those have sort of been lost to history. But the popular things like tomatoes or squash, those are still around.
So I've had this perception.
Yes.
That a lot of the heirloom seeds that we've had, and you hear dire warnings from seed people that we're going to lose these due to hybridization and having the big corporate moneyed interests take over our seeds. And I think a lot of those alarms are valid. But it sounds to me as though we're still at a point where we can retrieve a lot of those seeds. I'm surprised that 75% of the seeds are still available.
I was a little surprised, too, and I was happily surprised. I think, I think that probably if you look at organizations like Seed Savers Exchange and their yearbook, mm-hmm. you really see how much stuff is not available out in the general market. So we have lost a lot. But
So why is it these particular seeds? And I'll tell you what. Let's get to that question in a second, but let's go back because one of the things, before we get to that question about why those seeds might still be available, I think it's even more interesting, your contention that the Chicago Victory Gardeners were in the forefront of the movement during the war effort in World War II. Let's talk about that a little bit. How did you find that out?
Well, when I started researching this topic, I went to a lot of the local sources, Chicago Historical Society, the Harold Washington Library, and there are a lot of materials that were available from the Chicago Division of the Office of Civilian Defense. And what I found out is that I think this is because our Park District is so strong. You know, our Park District was established in 1934. It brought three different, you know, diverse park groups together. And so that was less than a decade before the war started. Mm-hmm. And so we were highly organized. People knew the war was coming. It had been going on since 1939. And so, you know, when it happened in 1941 for us, you know, people were pretty prepared that this was going to happen. And the Park District got really involved and got organized. When the Office of Civilian Defense came along, they divided the city up into different divisions, and we were highly organized. And so they used press, they used the Office of Civilian Defense captains in each of the divisions and the communities on the blocks, and we just rocked it. You know, we also it's a good example of how people will do anything for swag. There was a decal that the Office of Civilian Defense would give people if they registered their victory garden. Uh-huh. And so in 1942, they gave out 75,000 of them. And in 1943, they gave out 100,000 of them. So the quid pro quo for getting your sticker was you registered your victory garden. And then the block captains would go back and say, okay, how much did you grow? How did it work out? How many families were helping you garden? And so they were able to collect that data. And then that sort of model was rolled up from 1942 to the National Victory Garden Institute in D.C., and they spread out, you know, this is how Chicago's doing it. Maybe you should give it a try. And so we really led the nation from the organizational perspective, but we also led the nation because we had the largest victory garden, single victory garden in the country up in the North Park area. And
where do you know exactly where it was?
I don't.
Was it in North Park proper? No, that was a Forest Preserve or something like that, wasn't it at the time?
No, it was a neighborhood. But, there's a lot of empty land in Chicago in 1942.
Well, that's true. That's
so
not there now. Yeah, it's probably the whole Saugatash area was probably just a prairie or something. You know?
Yeah, yeah. So that's probably true. There's a lot more empty space.
But that's fascinating that we took the United States took the model of Chicago, which is the block captains and getting organized. Mm-hmm. And I love the idea that instead of going out to the neighborhoods and finding dead people to vote in elections, the block captains were out there finding people to garden and encouraging them to garden. We should do that now.
I agree. I mean, we agree.
And we do have block captains when it comes to things like Blue Cart and getting people to recycle, but I bet we're not as organized. And, well, of course, it's not the same thing, and the war effort was really galvanizing.
Right, it was. And, you know, the Office of Civilian Defense was responsible for other stuff, too. So the block captains were in charge of selling war bonds, of making sure people were trained for air raids. They also collected scrap. So, you know, there's a lot of projects that were involved with those block captains.
Mm-hmm. So we were the model for the nation.
That's right.
Did they keep track of the food production and the actual weight by actual weight?
No, they didn't. They didn't do that. I've read a statistic, and I think it comes from Chicago, that 40% of the food, the fresh vegetables in the Chicago area and the nation came from Victory Gardens. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot.
You know, it makes me wonder at that point where, and I don't know that you can answer this, until the Victory Gardens were planted, where were Chicagoans getting their food in general? Because there weren't supermarkets. There were local stores.
Right.
Now we would know, you know, it's basically the supermarkets. But at a time when people started planting Victory Gardens in World War II, I wonder where they were getting their food at that time. And I assume the answer is the corner market or fruit stand or whatever.
Truck farmers.
Yeah.
Well, I can't really answer that question, but what I can tell you is that, you know, during the Depression, there was food but no money. You know, people were poor and they couldn't buy food. Mm-hmm. During World War II, people had money because the economy was improving because people got war jobs, but there was less food to buy. So, for example, the transportation system, the trains, et cetera, were used for munitions. They didn't have space to be trucking in fresh produce. So that was part of the reason there was actually food shortages due to the transportation system being drafted to work for the war.
Yeah, so then it makes sense to plant in your own backyard. And I assume that when they did that, then they would share it with their neighbors and share it with the community. Was that part of the deal, too?
Well, you know, it's interesting. There's two things I've run across. One is a neighborhood set up a trading post, so you could bring all of your stuff, and if you had too many beets and someone else had too many beans, you could swap, mm-hmm. which I thought was interesting. And then in one of the suburbs, there was an article about a woman that was bedridden, so she couldn't garden, but she was sort of the clearinghouse, so she knew if so-and-so needed this and so-and-so had this. So there are different interesting ways that people were able to trade what they had grown.
And I'm sure she got on the internet, and she yes. just...
She tweeted about it.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Have beets, need corn.
That's Lamanda Joy, and she is also known as The Yarden on her blog and on Twitter. You know, and it's interesting, here we are, social media. Once again, this is how I found out about you. You followed my show and communicated with me, and we got to know each other, and I thought what you were doing is really fascinating. All right, let's get to, oh, by the way, if you got any questions or comments, 773-838-9278, 773-838-WCPT, give us a call. Let's get to that question of the kinds of things that were grown and are still grown today. You've got, if you go to the link, and it's, by the way, it's http://theyarden, YARDEN.com. Guess you don't need a www. It starts with the Lost Victory Garden Seed List of 1943, Part 2, and if you scroll down, you can get to the first posting, which is, and I see you got a post about Jean Ann Van Crevelin's book, Grocery Gardening, and she was on last week.
Yeah. I love that concept. I love calling it grocery gardening because it's happy, right? I've been hearing a lot of recession gardening and all that sort of stuff, and I don't like that. That's not positive. I really like grocery gardening.
Grocery gardening. That's right. I like that, too. Let's look at what they were growing. Do you want to go to part one or part two here?
Let's go to part two because it talks about tomatoes and everybody likes tomatoes. Well,
that's right. And the ones that they were growing in 1943 are Marglobe, Rutgers. I've heard of Rutgers. Mm-hmm. Pritchard, Baltimore, and John Baer, or Baer, B-A-E-R. And you have links where you can get those seeds. This is great that you actually have the links there. So, you know, you don't make people go try and track them down. Have you grown any of these yourself?
I haven't, but I'm gonna try and take a selection of these from the lost list this year and grow them in the Yarden and see how it works out.
Why do you call it the lost list when it? I mean, before this, was it not out there? Did you track down these? How did you find these specific varieties?
During my research, I dug through all sorts of materials, and stuck in one of the folders was this list of seeds recommended by a Chicago seed company at the time, Vaughn Seed Company, that's no longer in business. So
that's and you called it the lost list.
Yes. Little drama.
Yeah, that's okay. Also, people were growing squash, acorn squash, and Hubbard squash. You only have one of each of radishes, Swiss chard, and turnips. But you got two spinaches. King of Denmark and New Zealand, both of which are available.
Yes, and you know, a little funny thing on spinach. There was a little article I found called Kids Rejoice, Spinach Seeds Scarce. So there was actually a rush on certain types of seeds during the Victory Garden movement.
How did spinach ever get such a bad rap? It's really an...
Well, that's why they brought Popeye about. He fixed
that's
it, didn't
right.
he?
He fixed it.
Yeah. He did.
It's the canned stuff, I think. The presentation of canned spinach is a little disheartening.
Yeah. And pop in the can. It must have been really awful in the can. Maybe that was it. I don't know. But fresh spinach is so good.
Yes,
it is.
And it's so good for you.
Lots of iron.
Yeah. Of course, when I was growing up, I didn't eat spinach. My mom was not a spinach person. and almost all of our vegetables were cooked beyond recognition. They were all mush. But that's you know, broccoli. I don't think I even ate raw broccoli until I was an adult.
Mm. I used to eat broccoli with cheese sauce, and that was it.
Well, there you go. Cheese whiz? Is that a,
oh, no, is that a cheese?
No.
And then, and I see you've got a picture of, your mom?
That's my mom on the right there, yeah.
Your mom. And who was that with? Oh, you don't have the neighbor's name.
Yeah.
And those are Blue Hubbard squash.
Right.
And they're the size of, they're huge.
They're huge.
They're like, you know, I can't even tell you how big they are.
My great-grandfather was a chicken farmer, so they used chicken manure as fertilizer. And my dad learned how to garden from my great-grandfather after the war when they moved to Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
So these are definitely from great-grandpa's very prolific garden.
It's a fabulous picture. It really is. All right, we need to take a short break here, which is one of the things you're not supposed to say in that memo that came down.
Right? Oh, well.
At that other radio station.
Yeah.
You remember?
Yeah.
Don't ever say that. It's one of the 119 things that you're not supposed to say on the radio. Some of you may have been aware of that this week. I won't get into that. But, you
know.
That
was priceless, though. I love the irony of you posting it on your Facebook. Like, they can't stop you.
It's true.
You will be heard.
Well, it was a Robert Feeder's column.
Yeah.
I mean, I had to bust them. It's just is so ridiculous. I don't have, I need a 9 o'clock hour someplace.
Oh, dear.
So you've got a spare 9 o'clock hour,
yes.
There you go.
Here you are.
Cause I need to know what I'm doing here. one of the things I need to talk to you about is getting a jump on saving your plants from insect problems early this spring. We're just about at the perfect time to start using Bonide's all-season spray oil. Now, this oil can be used to control overwintering eggs of mites, scale aphids, bud moths, leaf rollers, galls, mealybugs, and more. It can be used now when your trees and shrubs are dormant, but you can also apply it when green tips appear or during the growing season. Bonide's all-season spray oil is part of their Garden Naturals line. It smothers most insect eggs that were left behind last year and are ready to be unleashed on your plants. It's easy to use and it's not a poison. Instead, here's how it works. The thin film of oil covers the target insect or mite and, well, it basically keeps it from breathing. The insect dies from suffocation. Now, it might be unpleasant for them, but it's going to make you and your plants happy. All Seasons oil is highly recommended for use on fruit trees, shade trees, shrubs, ornamentals, roses, and vegetables. It comes with a convenient applicator that will fit your needs, quart ready to use, quart ready to spray with a built-in hose and attachment for easy spraying, and a concentrate for those of you who prefer to mix your own, as I always, 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 always tell you, read and follow label directions. Even if I tell you it's safe or if it's organic or if it's natural, you have to follow directions. Please don't skip those. You can find All Season Oil at Sid's Garden Center in Palos Hills, Allsip Home and Nursery in Frankfurt, Bukima's Ace Hardware in Naperville. I'm not even sure if I'm pronouncing that right. Buikema. Buikema? Bukima? Maybe somebody in Naperville will give me a call. Or go to Bonide.com to find a retailer near you and see a complete listing of all of Bonide's garden naturals.
Mom, I'm taking Buddy out to play in the yard.
Wait, stay on the patio. We just treated the lawn. See the white flags?
Can I play next door in Jonathan Green's yard? He doesn't have any flags.
As long as he's okay with it, ask him first.
Hi, Mr. Green. Is it okay for us to play in your yard? We're not allowed to play in our yard because we have flags up.
I understand your mother's concern, but you don't have to worry about that on this lawn. I only use my organic weed control.
What does that mean?
It means it's safe to bring Buddy over anytime. Visit your local garden center or hardware store and ask for my Jonathan Green Organic Lawn Care Fertilizers. It's the safe way to grow a beautiful and carefree lawn. Ask for a free copy of my Organic Products Guide. It tells you everything you need to know to go organic with your lawn.
Find your nearest dealer at jonathangreen.com.
why are poppies okay to sow now?
Well, you can sow them in February. Just sprinkle
them
over
but,
the snow.
But I'm warning people, be careful running around out there, because we were listening to the Jonathan Green commercial just now, and Heather's talking about William going out in the yard and just being free in the wind.
Oh, he was so happy to be outside.
And Lamanda Joyce says she's sowing some poppy seeds. But again, I'm warning you, not everything can be done. Don't compact your soil. It's still wet. I mean, in my garden, because there was so much moisture and so much snow, there were a cup, like a potato chip bag blew into my yard, and I'm like tiptoeing across the lawn trying to get this potato chip bag out of there and try, oh, I don't want to step on anything. So be careful.
And now they say that we might get snow. Rick said there could be snow.
Possibility.
So don't.
Of course.
Don't plant your seeds
before they
hatch.
But you know what? The snow's not going to hurt anything. Snow would actually, it's so much better than like a hard freeze, you know. So here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Do you know that the Care of Trees has 24-hour emergency service? Winter storms can result in broken limbs or even downed trees. Now, the weight of storm-damaged trees is great. You know that. You wouldn't try to lift one of those, would you? They can be very dangerous to remove or prune, and if they've fallen on cars, other structures, power lines, or even other trees, that complicates removal even more. The Care of Trees offers a 24-hour emergency service to assist in performing the job safely, while minimizing further risk to your property. With 9 locations, the Care of Trees has been serving Chicagoland for 60 years. The Care of Trees shares your enthusiasm for the many ways trees enhance the quality of your life. And the Care of Trees combines that joy with a dedication to the utmost in client care, putting you and your trees first. Make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to come and take a look. See thecareoftrees.com. Or call 847-394-4220, 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees. It's almost working. Wow, this is an old one. Klondike Casanova. Okay.
I'll plant my spinach in my yard. I don't want to get out there too soon. I'm going to compact the soil.
See, you didn't know I did Popeye,
that
did you?
Was awesome. That made my whole day. We can end the show now.
Okay, that's all we have for folks. Good night, everybody. LaManda Joy is here in the studio. Before I let you go, she's also the Yarden on Twitter. And so I'll thank you for all the tweets today I'm getting from folks. We've gotten a fair number, haven't we?
Yes, we have.
More and more. It's scary. It really is. You're doing a talk. You're doing a talk today at Chicago Flower and Garden Show, right?
I am, 1 o'clock.
It's the final day. This is a good reason to go down to Navy Pier, see the show, stop in and say hi to LaManda. Do you prefer to go by, online and in your business, LaManda, or the Yarden, or what? What do you like?
Doesn't matter.
Okay. So go see LaManda at the Flower Show at 1 o'clock. It's a good show. And there's one of the nice things about the show is there's a lot about vegetable gardening in the show. There are some ways to incorporate vegetables into your ornamental scheme, like watercress by a water feature.
That's a good idea.
It's kind of cool.
And Swiss chard is so beautiful. It goes in borders.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
So, but tell me about the talk that you're doing on the 28th, which is 2 weeks from today.
The 28th is going to be at the Donk House in Lincoln Square, and what we're doing is we're reenacting some minutes I found from the kickoff of the 1944 garden season.
Really?
Yeah, it's going to be fun. We're going to be doing, we're going to try and take people back to what the world was like in 1944. We have We're going to have the ladies' baking auxiliary for Victory, making recipes, ration recipes from the 40s. You know, there's no sugar, and butter was hard to get.
Right.
So we're going to have some recipes that people can try of different baked goods. Mm-hmm. Also, just an interesting aside, popcorn became popular during World War II because all the candy and chocolate was being sent overseas. So, interesting.
You're just a font of knowledge here.
I know. So we're doing that. We're we have some actor friends that are portraying characters that were prominent in the Victory Garden movement here in Chicago, people from the Park District, some of the characters that were division chairmen of Division 6, which is where I live, Division 6. You're actually in Division 3, Mike, here in Garfield Ridge.
Wait. Run that by me again?
The city was broken into divisions for the Office of Civilian Defense,
and
right?
And this is Garfield Ridge?
Correct.
Oh, so, which is, now, you're not talking about Pulaski, or are you talking about Logan Square?
I'm in Lincoln Square.
You're in which was?
Division 6.
All right, I live in Logan Square. Which division was that?
That was 4.
All right, and this is 3 at next to Paco's Tacos and Zaca Tacos.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Anyway, so we're gonna be acting that out. We have some characters. We're gonna be performing a couple Andrew Sister songs to get people really to feel what it was like to be, you know, patriotic and passionate about Victory Gardens and hooray for everyone back then. And then after that, after all that excitement, I'm gonna talk about how, you know, we're coming up on another sort of bloom in the food production movement. We had 7 million new gardeners last year growing food in the U.S., and they're expecting even more in 2010, this summer.
7 million new gardeners?
Food gardeners.
Well, you know, it was funny. Last year, it's not funny. It's just something I said. Last year, I called last year the year of the homegrown vegetable, but really, it's this year. I really think it's going to go nuts this year.
I agree.
We had 7 million more last year. We may double that this year.
Easily.
I think more and more. I mean, did you get a chance to go to Family Farmed Expo at all?
I did. It was awesome.
Yeah. And I was there yesterday.
I was there yesterday, too.
Well, there were a lot of people, so I'm not surprised. And I didn't know what you looked like. But I'm not surprised we didn't run into each other down at the UIC, and we, you know, talked about it on the show last week, and that's just sort of a hint of what's going on. All right, so if you want to go see this, it sounds like a fabulous performance with actors and singing and the 40s at the Donk House Cultural Center, 4740 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago, Chicago Victory Gardens, yesterday and tomorrow. It's on March 28th. What time?
2 p.m.
2 p.m. The link is on my website, so you can go. I've got it all up there. You can go home and take a look at all this and let me know if I got anything wrong. And you'll see LaMonda Joy, or you can go out to Navy Pier today. We got our next guest. We getting ready? Good. I wasn't sure we had calls or not. Thank you so much, LaMonda, for coming in and sharing this with us, and keep tweeting.
My pleasure. Thanks,
and keep growing. And, you know, someday we'll talk about your own yard because all of this got started, and we don't have time to go into this because of the yardin is your yard.
That's right.
And the thing I will say about it, and you can comment on, is it's amazing how a yard can change people, right? It just changes your outlook of the world.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. We like to have our friends over, teach people. It's really been a beautiful thing for us.
That's great. LaMonda Joy, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Imagine 2 full days of thought-provoking conversations on topics ranging from commercial composting to green infrastructure to sustainable agriculture and more. That's what Greentown, the future of community, will be, and you can be part of it. The 2-day event is this week. It's sponsored by WRD Environmental and designed to help create sustainable communities. Anyone interested in seeing how communities can become greener is welcome to join the dialogue. Hear inspiring national and local leaders discuss ways to make communities greener, healthier, and more prosperous. Greentown will take place March 17th and 18th, so St. Paddy's Day. There's. If you want to celebrate St. Paddy's Day, don't play goofy Irish music. Go to Greentown, right?
Yes.
And you can do it also on the 18th, and it's at the College of Lake County in Grays Lake. Enjoy one or both days. Speaking, by the way, have you found any U2 for me here?
Not yet. Since we were talking 40s, I pulled Benny Goodman.
All right, we'll do that next.
Because I find him far superior than U2, Benny Goodman.
Really?
Oh, yes.
You could get some argument there.
I like you too, but there's nothing like good swing jazz.
Okay, great. Learn more at greentownconference.com. And for innovative, sustainable landscape development, choose WRD Environmental, located at the Chicago Center for Green Technology, and online at WRDEnvironmental.com.
Providing Chicago's North Shore with award-winning remodeling and design-build services since 1991, giving their clients top-quality service and real value. They're on the cutting edge of green building technology, helping clients make their home more energy efficient without sacrificing beauty or function. If you want to make your home more energy efficient, simply want to add a room or renovate, call DR Services at 847-998-1687 or visit them at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
DNR Services. I cut off the beginning of that. I just want to let you know that's Ron Cowgill's outfit, and they do great, great work. And he's really modest. He doesn't talk about it a lot on his show.
He doesn't,
and he should. I mean, they're a great company, and don't let him know I said this. He's a great guy. He's a nice guy.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, I don't know what he's doing hanging out with Joe Builder, but.
Making radio magic.
I guess. Radio magic.
Radio magic.
That's what they do best.
With hammers and nails.
At any rate, I wanted to tell you that spring is a week away, and you should get ready to garden. Sid's Greenhouses is ready to help you get started. If you haven't gotten your seeds started yet, and I know Lamanda's already got her seeds. Did you order all of yours online, by the way?
No, actually, I tried to buy them at local stores this year.
Good for you. Like SIDS, you know, and if
yeah.
you want to do that, go on over. You know, and I know a lot of people, they're purists and they're snobs and they want to, you know, do the perfect seed online. But, you know, it's good to support your local garden centers, too, because they often have great selections, like at SIDS. And they still have a good selection of the best varieties, including USDA organics. Now, if you don't have a yard to plant in, or even if you do, you should consider getting an earth box. Experiment with one this year. You can grow vegetables to beat the band in this. It's a revolutionary garden system that uses less fertilizer, less water, and certainly will require less effort. Now, if you're more of a tree person, it's a great time to check out the selection of fruit trees at SIDS. Shop early for the best selection. And while it's still too early to plant most summer-blooming bulbs, it's not too early to check out the new varieties at SIDS. Chicagoland's premier garden centers, they're located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier-Plainfield Road at Hassard Boulevard. For more information or to join their free email list for news, garden tips, and sale information, visit SIDSonline.com. See, this is why I have Heather around here. She finds the best music. And this is the kind of thing I hope you'll be hearing at your deal on the 28th, right?
Yeah, that and some Andrew sisters.
I
will find them next.
Okay,
yeah,
we'll do
it. Don't send it to the apple tree.
With anyone else but me.
That's right.
This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. We got another great event coming up next week that I am very proud to be part of. And let's just go, where's Paul? Is he on line one?
Yes, sir.
All right. We will go to line one and bring in Paul Tukey, who you have heard on this program before. He is the chief cook and bottle washer for SafeLawns.org. Paul, how are you?
I am great, Mike. It's raining like a monsoon here on the East Coast, but I made it home safely from New Jersey about 4 o'clock in the morning, one of the longest drives of my life. But I made it home, got to wake up and have breakfast with my kids, and pretty soon I'm going to be out in Chicago, and I'm very, very excited.
Does your family even recognize you anymore?
You know, the reason that I kill myself to drive home at night is to make sure that they do recognize me. I have two young kids, and I want to make sure that they don't forget who Daddy is. But I feel like with our quest for SafeLawns.org, making backyards and neighborhoods safe from pesticides is a worthy cause, and I actually do it in honor of my children. because I think that somebody's got to do it. It's my goal to keep kids safe from these things.
I've been talking, I've been a speaker for Safe Lawns for a couple of years now, and Paul and I had never met until last month when we were both speaking up in Wisconsin at the Garden Visions conference, and so we got a chance to finally meet and bond a little bit. And you tell the most amazing story, and it's similar to mine, which is kind of funny because I was looking at your presentation, and the fact that we've never met, and I had never seen your presentation, you'd never seen mine, and we say so many of the same things. You talk about going into a box store and watching a small child play with a weed and feed product, building sandcastles in the aisle with it, and I show a photo of a weed and feed product in a box store that had been split open with all the weed and feed products spilling onto the shelf, and it's about 4 feet tall, which is, you know, enough for 6 or 8 year old to come by and start playing with it. And it's really kind of the same story, which is that these products are, well, they're not safe, and yet the box stores and some other places treat them as if they are. And that is what you're fighting with your movie, A Chemical Reaction, right?
Right. I looked at what Canada did. If I go back for a second, I wrote a book, as you know, called The Organic Lawn Care Manual.
Which I highly recommend to anybody. I always recommend it in my talks. If you want to know about organic lawn care, pick up a copy of The Organic Lawn Care Manual. And it's got everything you need to know, pictures, graphs, explanations, lists of products. It's fabulous. Continue, Mr. Paul.
Well, so I wrote a one-page success story in that book about a little town called Hudson, Quebec, that was the first town in North America to ban pesticides. And when I wrote the book, I just put it in there. And it really just, the success was the fact that they had done it, and that by some people's estimations, the property values had not gone down, the yard still looked good. But I knew as a former journalist that there had to have been a pretty good backstory. So I started going up to Hudson in 2008 and filming this town and filming the people who were involved in the story, because this started a generation ago, back in 1991, and I wanted to really hear how it happened, and I really wanted to see with my own eyes how the lawns looked today, because the chemical industry will predict that everything goes all to hell in a handbasket if you stop using their products. And Hudson is living, breathing proof that, in fact, the lawns still look fantastic. People have figured out alternatives. And people are moving to Hudson because it has a reputation of being an environmentally friendly town. And as a result of Hudson, most importantly, more than two-thirds of Canada now lives under the auspices of a pesticide ban. Home Depot doesn't sell stuff like Weed and Feed and Roundup in its stores. And just last month, the Canadian government announced that they're not going to sell Weed and Feed anywhere in the country, whether there's a ban or not. And so Canada's taken these progressive steps. We made a movie called The Chemical Reaction, which is winning awards at film festivals. It's a really good human interest story. It's not just a movie about how bad pesticides are. And we made this movie to say to the American people, look at what Canada has done, and why aren't we doing it here? And we're so excited to be having our Chicago premiere this coming Saturday.
And it's next Saturday, 3 o'clock. At Columbia College's Ferguson Auditorium. Safer Pest Control Project has stepped up. They're great people. And Rachel Rosenberg and Steve Pincuspy have helped put this together. We're going to show this film at 3 o'clock and follow it with a panel discussion about organic lawn care. I've seen the movie. It's terrific. And it's very inspiring. One of the amazing things, and I don't want to give away, Do I give it away if I tell them what the Canadian Supreme Court did? You know, does it?
Well, I mean, you can certainly find that information online, and I don't think knowing how it ends spoils the message of the movie a bit at all.
So this is interesting that you're saying last month the Canadian government has decided to move against lawn pesticides.
Well, what they did is provincial governments, because Canada is almost like 11 different countries, as you probably know, several provincial governments have just banned these things outright. But because they don't act in unison, There are still a few provinces that have not banned pesticides, but what the federal government stepped up and did, an organization called Health Canada, which is our equivalent of the EPA, Health Canada stepped up and said, you know what, we're going to take away weed and feed and insect killer and fertilizer, because most of our pesticides in the United States are applied as a part of a weed and feed or an insect killer and fertilizer combination. And the Health Canada stepped up and said, you know, that is just bad soil management. That is just not necessary. Nobody has 100% weeds on their property, so why are you putting weed killer in an area where it's not necessary? So they've made it illegal, and I think it's a great policy. That's, I mean, right there, that would be a tremendous victory for us to look at that rationally and say, okay, you have patches of weeds, you want to get rid of the weeds, okay, put some weed killer down, although I don't agree with that, but if you feel you must, put some weed killer down, but you don't get to put it on the rest of the property as a so-called preventative measure. And so the federal government in Canada made that decision, and I think it's a very rational approach to it.
It is great, and one of the things you realize if you look at this, and I know that a lot of people listening to my show they're not horticulturists. They might not know it about IPM, which is integrated pest management.
Right.
But that's taught a lot in universities, and it's taught to master gardeners. And one of the tenets of IPM is that you use the least toxic method of pest control first, and then work your way up if you can't control it until you get to the most toxic. And I always argue that we've turned that on its head in the United States. We're always reaching for the can of spray first, the most toxic. And if you look at IPM, the idea of spreading poison on your whole lawn because you have one dandelion makes no sense at all. It's against the tenets of IPM. So, you know, if you got a dandelion, well, here's what you can do. You can dig it out, or if you're, you know, if you feel like you don't want to do that, spot treat it, you know. But spreading poison willy-nilly across a lawn doesn't make any sense at all.
And the message of my book in the weed chapter, I talk about weeds being messengers sent by Mother Nature to tell us something about our soil. So if you have mostly dandelions, it's because your soil wants to grow dandelions and not grass. And the way to correct that are some fairly simple measures that you can take to correct soil conditions so that grass wants to grow and the dandelions don't. And instead of, even if you go down and pull them all out, they're still going to want to grow back because you haven't changed the soil conditions. And that's the way you need to look at this going forward, I think. The public needs to look at this. So organic gardening isn't any more work, but it is a different way of thinking. The soil is always trying to tell us messages. Mother Nature is always trying to send us messages. And we've been into this terrible habit in the last 50 years of trying to override nature with products. And a lot of my approach to lawn care and landscape care is good old-fashioned common sense.
And I agree with that. And again, you stole from my playbook there, because I've been saying that also for a long time, that weeds are messengers. And again, I will say clover, but clover's not a weed, as you and I both know, Paul. 50 years ago, we used to put clover seed into our lawn mixes, and then, you know, some genius figured out that we can drive people crazy by taking it out and tell them they shouldn't have clover in their lawn. But clover tells you something about your lawn. Dandelions do. Creeping Charlie will tell you something about your lawn. All of the crabgrass will tell you something about your lawn. And actually, it tells you about the soil. As you said, it tells you something about the conditions in which the lawn is growing. And that's what they are. They're messengers. And I say, we always want to kill the messenger when we don't want to listen to the messenger.
I don't know how much time we have. It's a quick story. Do you know that the weed and feed industry emerged from a small chemical spill in Downers Mills in Chicago?
No.
Is it Downers? No, Downers Grove.
Downers Grove.
Downers Grove, sorry. Downers Grove in Chicago. There was a nerve agent called 2,4-D, and it spilled out of a building. And interestingly, the grass kept growing when this stuff was spilled, but all the dandelions and all the other weeds died back. And a guy named R. Milton Carlton, who lived in Downers Grove, looked at that and said, "Huh, wow, that's strange. Boy, all the grass is growing, but all the other weeds are dying. I bet homeowners would really like that. I think they'd really buy that. I think the golf course industry might really like this stuff." And that's how 2,4-D, which was a nerve agent used in the war. And they discovered that it had properties that killed weeds. And they started putting it into Agent Orange, which, of course, was used in the Vietnam War and caused tremendous health problems with people.
Well, you know, a friend of mine, I'm talking to a microbiologist a couple of weeks ago, and he says, you can make Agent Orange in your garage. All you got to do is get 2,4-D and 2,4-5-T and, you know, mix them up, and there you go. There's your Agent Orange.
Right.
And they're both herbicides. Let me bring in right now Steve Newman. He's with another guy who's going to be at this event next Saturday. He's with Clean Air Lawn Care in Chicago. How you doing, Steve?
I'm excellent. Thanks for having me, Mike.
It's a pleasure to have you on, and I've got the links to, by the way, to all of this on my website at mikenovak.net. And this week's show, I got links to safelawns.org and to Safer Pest Control Project and to Clean Air Lawn Care Chicago. Now, you're a franchise guy, Steve, with Clean Air Lawn Care. One of the things I have said for a number of years is that I'm surprised at how few organic lawn care companies there are in the Chicago area. What do you say to that?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's frustrating that the organic companies that are out there, too many chemicals are also still applied.
Yeah, I know people that kind of go halfway. They'll say, well, we can give you 80% organic lawn care or 75% or 90% or something. And I think, well, do you know why the companies aren't doing this in Chicago as much?
I think it's just the commitment to education. It cannot be done unless you're educating the customer and getting the customer to buy in with the process. So we make a big point to engage the customer in the process from the very beginning.
So how do you do that? What do you sell them on? I mean, and I guess the first question you always have to ask, and it's a shame, does it cost more?
Right. I think the short answer to that is it costs a little bit more in the beginning, but over time it definitely costs less because nature takes over and the ecological system takes over and starts doing the work. Many people, I think, believe they just go to the store and they go buy an organic bag of fertilizer, swap that out with what they were previously using, and they're off and running. And the product choices, I think, are some of the last things you have to think about. Paul has mentioned it, and you guys have been talking about it, starting with the soil, doing a soil test, aerating, seeding is a big part of it, the mowing practices, the watering, all of these things are key components to a successful organic program.
And if I may interject, Paul has, you've come up with, you know, we've all heard of four-step. You got a 12-step program, which I think is kind of funny because it has echoes of the 12-step program.
Well, yeah, and I was trying to be a bit facetious, and I say my program, because I get that all the time. How many steps? And they say 12. The first step is mental detoxification, which is, of course, a straight ripoff of the real 12-step program. And it really isn't. As I said earlier, going organic isn't more work. It's not more money. It is, you do have to think differently a lot, but again, a lot of it is just applying common sense principles of observation. And it isn't a by rote four-step process. If you apply this product at this time, this will happen. Organics does not work that way. It does become an ecological system. It involves cultural practices like mowing and watering properly, as your guest already said. And, you know, and yes, there are some products out there that, whether they be fertilizers or natural weed control. And as I announced in Wisconsin, there is now an organic selective herbicide. It's made from chelated naturally occurring iron that allows grass to grow and kills the weeds. And because the industry got such pushback on a lot of the chemicals, they're starting to develop these alternatives. They're starting to invest money in this kind of research. So these products are out there, they're changing, but I hate the focus on weeds, quite frankly. In Canada now, let me tell you what's happening in 20 years' time in the town of Hudson. If you don't have a couple of dandelions and some clover and maybe a little bit of plantain on your lawn, people figure that you must be cheating. They figure that you must be coming into the United States, buying the poisons, and bringing them back over the border illegally. And it's really changed the whole dynamic. And I think that's just a healthier way, and I think that will come to this country in time.
I think that's a really, really good point. I feel the same way. I was at a talk that I did at Sid's Garden Center a couple of weeks ago, and sitting next to this guy, and he was telling me, I use a four-step program, and everybody thinks I got the best lawn on the block. And I was thinking, well, you don't have the healthiest lawn on the block. I can guarantee that. And, you know, it's that frame that my – and actually, and I did start to talk to him about it, but you could tell – this was going to be a hard sell for a guy like that.
Yeah.
And Steve, I'm going to ask you one quick question before I let you go, and it's a brutal one. Can you make a living doing this organically in Chicago?
Absolutely. Yes. You can, one, you can manage the lawns without using the chemicals. We've got living proof of that. Our lawns look great. We have happy customers, and with good-looking lawns, happy customers, that sounds like a recipe for a good business.
I think it is. All right, next Saturday, I want you all to come out and flood the auditorium, Columbia College's Ferguson Auditorium, 600 South Michigan, 3 o'clock. Paul will be there, Steve will be there, I will be there, Rachel Rosenberg, other people. After the movie, which is very inspiring, we're going to tell you how to get yourself and your lawn off of chemicals. And it, as Paul said, it's common sense stuff, you know, like mow higher. And things like that, or aerate your soil and add some organic matter. That ain't rocket science, folks. It really isn't. Paul Tukey, always great to have you on the show. Steve Newman, I will see both of you guys next week.
All right. Sounds great. Hey, thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
No problem. Now, if you think that organics are the new kid on the block, and speaking of organics, consider this. The Espoma Company has been producing high-quality organic and natural products for more than 8 decades, and they just made growing beautiful plants in containers easier, and organic. Introducing the new Espoma Organic Potting Mix. Espoma is the maker of Holly Tone, Plant Tone, and other organic plant foods. Now they make container growing mixes. Espoma Organic Potting Mix is a blend of only the finest natural ingredients and is fortified with mycotone mycorrhizae. Now, mycorrhizae, to put it simply, are fungi that establish symbiotic relationships with plant roots. It sounds technical, but don't worry about it. Mycotone promotes root growth and helps grow bigger, better plants with more blooms. Your plants will shine all year round. Look for all of the new Espoma organic potting mixes at your local garden center this spring. There's the organic potting mix, the organic seed starter mix, and the organic cactus mix. And remember to pick up new Espoma Grow Tone, the ideal liquid plant food for all potted plants. For more information about Espoma Natural Gardening Solutions, call 888-ESPOMA1 or go to their website, www.espoma.com. That's ESPOMA.com. Espoma, the leader in natural gardening solutions since 1929.
Place your expensive shrubbery every time deer or rabbits visit your property. You can save your plantings for a fraction of the cost with Bob-X. Spring is finally here, and nature's hungry creatures will start feasting on your gardens and landscapes. Stop them the all-natural way with Bob-X repellent sprays. Bob-X guarantees protection for your spring plantings from deer and small animal damage. Use the most effective animal repellents on the market. Bob-X repellents give people the confidence to invest in and enjoy their landscapes. Bob-X's unique deterrent ingredients are all-natural and are environmentally friendly. Bob-X won't wash off in the rain or with regular watering. Get Bob-X at your local independent garden center or hardware store. If they don't have it, ask them to get Bob-X. To learn more about Bob-X, go to bobx.com. That's bobbex.com. Plants thrive and survive with Bob-X.
Hey, you know, they're another great sponsor that I welcome back to the Mike Novak Show, Bob-X. I was really happy when I had Colleen Lakovich from the Lurie Garden in Millennium Park on last fall, and she said, oh, yeah, I use Bob-X all the time. It's great. And it just reminds me to remind you that if you hear about it on my show, go out to a garden center and say, hey, I heard about it on Mike's show. Give me some Bob-X. Or Espoma, or Jonathan Green, or, you know, go to Sid's, or, you know, all of these. Do me a favor and support the people who support me. Mighty House is next. The boys are in the building, so we're ducking out of here. I hope they brought the Munchkins, because I didn't do that. And it's Ron Cowgill, Joe Builder. I'm Mike Novak. I hope you tune in again next week for the Mike Novak Show. We'll see you then.